Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Kruger, spreading you with new topics every single week of the mother trucking year and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And this is it. This is our 2024 Halloween special, guys. You have made it. Episode 135. Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? I remember when I was just a lonely podcaster, all I had was my computer. I didn't have a mic yet. And now look where we're at. It's Halloween. We are going to have a great time, and we have a lot of fun surprises for you on today's episode. The big piece of the episode, as you may have been wondering, yes, our UFC Edmonton predictions. We will be making those, as well as our Week 9 NFL quick picks. We'll also be looking at the top fantasy scores so far per position in the NFL. Of course, new UFC fights that have been announced. We've had some good ones. We've had some goodies announced. Top 10 new things in pop culture. And your surprise topic for today is I am going to be ranking my top 10 Halloween costumes I have worn of all time and telling you the background behind them. I was thinking about maybe doing candy, but I actually ended up doing that for a discussion post for class. And I was thinking about looking up the top 10 most popular costumes, but that was almost impossible to do for some reason. So I'm just going to tell you all what my top 10 costumes that I've done are. And you may be surprised at what number one is. And I cannot wait until this is uploaded and I can post my little clip on Instagram promoting this because I can't wait for you all to see my costume. But guys, without a doubt, this is the 2024 Halloween special. Let's get right on into it with, of course, the thing we talk about every single episode, new UFC news. As far as locations, as far as the main event of UFC Tampa on December 14th, we don't have any new info. Okay, we know February 1st, they'll be going to Saudi Arabia, and I believe the next weekend or 2 weekends after that will be UFC 312, I can't really recall. I think it is the next weekend, because they're in Australia. But other than that, I mean, we don't really know much, so unfortunately, we're just going to have to go over some new fights. But these new fights are pretty interesting. First up, UFC 311 is when this fight is taking place. I believe this was actually moved from being on UFC Apex 101. This fight takes place January 18th. Johnny Walker, your number 9 light heavyweight, takes on the number 14th ranked Bogdan Guskov. Johnny Walker has had some terrible luck as of late, getting knocked out by Magomed Ankalaev, getting knocked out by Jamal Hill, getting knocked out by Volkan Ozdemir. The guy can't catch a break. And unfortunately for him, they're giving him another knockout artist in Bogdan Guskov. Bogdan comes in the UFC, loses to Volkan Ozdemir in round one, follows it up with a round one knockout of, Zach Pauga. And then after that, a round two knockout of Ryan Spann. So Bogdan Guskov, 16-3. He's got 13 finishes to his name. You know he's coming to knock out Johnny Walker. Johnny, 7-6 in the UFC. I'd say out of his 13 to 14 UFC fights, because I think he has a draw in there, I'd say only about 3 or 4 have been boring. Other than that, most Johnny Walker fights are fun, and I'll be interested to see how they perform in this one. This will be a great main card fight for UFC 311, although I did think this was going to be the UFC Vegas 101 main event on January 11th. I guess not. We'll have to see. After that, a banger, an absolute banger. We mentioned UFC Saudi Arabia, February 1st. It's at the Kingdom Arena. Heavyweight fight, the number 4 ranked men's heavyweight, Sergey Pavlovich, takes on the number 8 ranked Jairzinho Biggie Boy Rozenstruik. Someone's going to sleep. All right, that's all I'm going to tell you. Someone's going to sleep in this one, and it's probably going to be Jairzinho Rozenstruik. My boy, Sergey Pavlovich, back in action, 18-3 with 17 knockouts. He's also 6-3 in the UFC with 6 knockouts. And of his 21 professional fights, only 2 have gone the distance. He is sadly on a 2-fight losing streak. The one loss is to Tom Aspinall. That one we will not hold against him. But he lost to Volkov, got just outpieced for 3 straight rounds, didn't look his normal self. Was really sad to see. As for Jairzinho Rozenstruik, I honestly can't even recall the last time he had an outstanding performance. You know, he just beat Tai Tuivasa in a boring 3-round fight. Here he is getting rewarded with the number 4 heavyweight in the world. I'm really surprised, actually, they're doing Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Sergey Pavlovich. I figured Derek Lewis versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik should be happening, but I'll take whatever we can get. So I guess we're not doing Halton Almeida versus Sergey Pavlovich then, which, okay, that's fine with me. But yes, Pavlovich back in action. February 1st, that Saudi Arabian card is going to be loaded. Here's one for you. UFC 309, November 16th, of course, Madison Square Garden. Mauricio Ruffy finally has a new opponent. In steps James Lontop to replace Charlie Campbell. Mauricio Ruffy, 10-1, 1-0 in the UFC. He made his debut against Jamie Mullarkey this year and absolutely ran through him, getting a 50K performance bonus. And we have been waiting for him to get another fight book. No one will fight this guy. They keep getting injured. So thankfully, James Lontop will be stepping in. He is 0-2 in the UFC, finished in both those fights, but hey, you know, 14-4 professionally, James Goku Lontop stepping in, I respect it, but I think Mauricio Ruffy is going to take this one. He's out of the Fighting Nerds camp, guys. All right, I'm talking Gene Silva, I'm talking Carlos Prates, I'm talking Kyle Barallo. There are killers, absolute killers, coming out of the Fighting Nerds gym. I'm excited for this one. Here's one for you. UFC 311 again. Number 9 ranked women's bantamweight, Carol Rosa. I didn't know her actual name was Caroline. Takes on the number 14th ranked Aileen Perez. Aileen Fiona Perez. 11-2 professionally. 4-1 the UFC. And I believe she's on a 3-fight winning streak. Good for her. Coming off a win over Daria Zelenevikova. Knew she would win that one. She'll take on Carol Rosa, who is ranked number 9. She had a great fight of the night against Irene Aldana not too long ago. Wins over Pankianziad, Yana Santos. She's all right. Winner of this will move up into the top 10. The loser probably will go to unranked land. Just how it happens. UFC 311 gets another prelim fight at the middleweight division as Zachary Savage Reese, 8-1 professionally, 2-1 in the UFC, with two beautiful finishes of Julian Marquez and Jose Medina. He takes on the 10-2 Cedric the Reaper Dumas, who is 3-2 in the UFC. I think he's coming off a win over Abu as a tier. Cedric Dumas hasn't done too much in his UFC run so far. Zachary Reese, 8-1. All of those fights have ended in round one. I mean, this dude is nonstop action. Coming off a 20-second knockout of Julian Marquez. I'm a big fan of Zachary Reese ever since I saw him on the Contender Series. His one loss, he got head slam finished when he had a nasty armbar in. Dude is nonstop action. Give me Zachary Reese for that one. UFC 311 looking mighty, mighty good. But we still got fights coming at you this year. UFC Tampa doesn't have a main event, but he gets another fight. This one in the lightweight division as Michael Johnson steps in for his 30th UFC fight as he takes on Ottoman the Bulldozer as a tier. Ottoman 13-2. He's 2-2 in the UFC, you know, coming off of some losses. But that, you know, it happens. Michael Johnson, I mean, this is this guy. This guy pushing 40 almost, he's 38, wins over Tony Ferguson, wins over Edson Barboza, wins over Dustin Poirier. Okay, Michael Johnson, a legend of the fight game. 22-19, I mean, he has been fighting. Wait, what is 22 plus 19? That is, what is that, 41. He's had 30. Wow, he has had 30 professional fights out of his 40 professional fights in the UFC. Dude is a legend, and I'm going to back him. Okay, I'm going to back Michael Johnson. 3-time fight of the night winner, 1-time KO of the night, 1-time performance of the night. This guy is nonstop action. Love him. December 14th has a new matchup, unfortunately, as Saeed Nurmagomedov is out against Daniel Marcos. Daniel Marcos, 16-0, undefeated, and will be stepping Adrian Yanez. Adrian Yanez, 17-5, 6-2 professionally. He's had some unfortunate luck as of late, you know. Had to take on Jonathan Martinez, had to take on Rob Font, but he's back in action, coming for it. I mean, of his 6 UFC wins, 4 performance of the nights, and one of his losses, a fight of the night. He is super entertaining. I'm excited for this one. I'm really torn. You know, part of me wants to pick Daniel Marcos, but Adrian Yanez, he's been fighting top-tier guys since the get-go. This is gonna be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one to choose, but I think I am going to ride with Daniel Marcos. We'll have to see, though. But that's all the new UFC news we have. I'm excited to see what other stuff comes out here and there. The UFC keeps on rolling. And what also keeps on rolling is the 24-25 NFL season. And with the NFL season comes fantasy football. And on every single episode, almost every week, essentially, we look at how the top fantasy performers are doing per position just to kind of see who are the top 10 quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, etc. per position. Let's get into it. Then we'll make our week 9 NFL quick picks. So week 8 brought us some excitement here and there. And we have some new faces in the top 10 for some of these positions. positions. You know, at quarterback, Lamar at one, no shocker. Just got Deontay Johnson. I mean, the Ravens need to be nerfed. They are so freaking good. And despite a few fluke loss to the Browns, I still think Lamar Jackson, best QB in the NFL right now. Baker at two, having the type of season that Browns fans wish he always could have had. He is special. Don't let the record fool you. Baker Mayfield has been leading the Buccaneers all year. Jaden Daniels at three, rookie of the year, potential MVP maybe. He has completely turned this Commanders franchise around. I'm sure the Bears, I'm sure the Broncos, who aren't doing too bad even, but I'm sure the Panthers, you know, they think about, what if we had a Jaden Daniels? Would they be that good? Maybe. Kid's talented. At number four, Josh Allen. At number five, Joe Burrow. I mean, no changes. The entire top five, same from last week. All five of these guys consistently good. Newcomer, though, at six, Jalen Hurts, fresh off of his 5-touchdown, 35-point fantasy performance. My boy, Jalen Hurts, at number six. I'm a huge Jalen Hurts fan, of him every year. I get him in fantasy every single year. Excited that he's back in the top 10. Number seven, Kyler Murray, drops one spot. I wouldn't hold him against him. He led a comeback against the Dolphins. He's super talented. Number eight, Brock Purdy. He's coming fresh off of a 26-point fantasy performance. 49ers, man, they need some luck. They just did they just lose someone for the season? I know Ayuk is probably out with a, or no, they're on a bye. I think they're on a bye right now. But they picked up a win over the Cowboys, was it? But they kind of failed late. I think it's the loss of Christian McCaffrey that's really been hurting them. At number nine, Bo Nix. Talk about the second best rookie in the draft class. Bo Nix jumps into the top 10 for the quarterback position. Absolutely love what Bo Nix has been doing with the Broncos this year. He had like 29 fantasy points last weekend. I mean, Bo Nix, incredible. Number 10, Geno Smith does drop three spots. You know, he's just, Geno Smith is average. What can I say? Geno Smith at 10, it's just, he hasn't been doing anything spectacular. He does the bare minimum, but he does the bare minimum at a pretty good rate. Moving on to running back, Derrick Henry, man. The fact the Ravens have the number one QB and the number one running back, someone needs to nerf these guys. Insane. Alvin Kamara at two, Saquon Barkley at three. No changes. Your top three has remained the same for, I think, 3 to 4 straight weeks. Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Saquon Barkley leading the charge. Three of the best running backs in the game. At number four, though, Bijan Robinson jumping two spots. You know, this was the number three running back going off the board. It was either him or Breece Hall, and he's finally in the top five. Good job, Bijan. Falcons are finally connecting on offense every single way you put it, through the air, through the ground. And Bijan has been looking great. At number five, Kyren Williams, man. Kyren Williams. We already knew he was good. Breakout running back last year. Still leading the charge for the Rams. Number six, Jahmyr Gibbs. He had so many fantasy points last week. He remains at number six. Breece Hall dropping three spots from 4 to 7, unfortunately, since last week. Jets are just atrocious. And we're going to give our prediction for the Jets game against the Texans this week coming up. And it is just, it's rough. It's looking rough. Number eight, James Cook, finally in the top 10 at number eight. I mean, it's just been a long time coming. He has good performances here and there, is always in the double digits, but, you know, he's just, for some reason, just never really gotten into the top 10. Welcome to the top 10, number eight, James Cook, helping the Bills excel this season. Number nine, Kenneth Walker, dropping two spots. You know, Kenny, kind of had an off week, and that's how the Seahawks season is pretty much gone. You know, they did play a tough Bills team, we'll give them that, but I mean, Kenneth Walker, you got to step up. You really got to step up. Number 10, Josh Jacobs, Packers running back, where I expected him to be from the get-go of the season. I mean, he gets so many damn touches. He was bound to wind up in the top 10. Packers are exactly what we think of. We don't like the Packers here. We're a Vikings fan. We're not a Packers fan. Wide receiver-wise, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase at one, he remains there. Chris Godwin, you have to understand how many fantasy points he had for him to be out this week, out for this season, and to still be the number two guy. Respect to him. Chris Godwin is slowly going to drop off our list over the next few weeks. It's sad to see. Number three, I'm not sad to see this, Justin Jefferson. I mean, the best part of this Minnesota Vikings team, we just got to string some freaking wins together. Goodness me, but Justin Jefferson, number three running back, number three wide receiver, fantasy-wise in the league, but I think over anyone, he's the best wide receiver in the league. Give him the best quarterback in the league, and him and Justin Jefferson will put up unreal numbers. Number four, CeeDee Lamb wasn't even ranked last week. That's how much a 39-point performance will do for you. Yeah, I mean, CeeDee Lamb, similar to, I'd say similar to Justin Jefferson, but not really, because the Vikings have a really great team. Cowboys team sucks. Talk about going from the number one defense to the number 32 defense. It's been atrocious, but CeeDee Lamb has been a bright spot for the otherwise lackluster Cowboys team. Number five, Drake London dropping two spots. He just wasn't the top target for Kirk Cousins this past week. And when you got Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb putting up as many points as they do, you're going to get passed up. Same for Garrett Wilson at six. He drops one spot from last week. I mean, it's when the Jets team, the state of their team, he's just not going to be getting that many points. At number seven, this one sucks. Brian Thomas Jr., moving up one spot from last week, number seven as a rookie, is just incredible, and he's unfortunately hurt. He's going to be out next week, which means he is not going to be getting any fantasy points. It sucks because Brian Thomas Jr. has been so talented all year, and he's freaking injured, man. Just pisses me off. So sad. Miss you, Brian. Number eight, Stephon Diggs. He drops two spots, and he tore his ACL, Achilles or something. He's out for the year. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Stephon Diggs, Chris Godwin, love seeing you in here, and they're not even going to be playing the rest of the season. Sucks to see it. Terry McLaurin at number nine. Jaden Daniels loves Terry McLaurin. And when we've learned, if Terry McLaurin has a good quarterback throwing to him, he'll put up some insane numbers. Finally in the top 10. And finally, at number 10 for the wide receiver position, Jaden Reed drops two spots. There was one point he was the number one wide receiver after week one. But unfortunately, you know, you got Romeo Doubs, Ontavian Wicks, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft. There's so many options for Jordan Love or even Malik Willis when he's in that you're just not going to be putting up insane numbers. But Jaden Reed, still talented, probably is wide receiver one. He's at 10. Moving on to tight end, freaking George Kittle. Passing up my boy Brock Bowers from 2-1. Bowers and Kittle, they flip-flop essentially every week between number one and number two, which I kind of love. It makes it competitive. Kittle, the best tight end in the league. Brock Bowers, the best rookie tight end in the league. Love to see it. Trey McBride jumping two spots to the number three tight end position. This is where everyone expected him to be. Trey McBride was the number three, number four, maybe even number one to some people. Tight end going off the board. Kyler Murray is finally learning how to use him. Trey McBride having a great season. Number four, Kyle Pitts jumping an insane three spots. We are finally seeing the Kyle Pitts that everyone gassed him up to be with an insanely good quarterback behind the helm in Kirk Cousins. We are able to see Kyle Pitts at his prime. Number five, Tucker Kraft. Despite having another touchdown game, he just didn't have as many fantasy points as Trey McBride and Kyle Pitts. He drops one spot from last week. Tucker Kraft, still amazing. Two new ranked people, Kate Otten, after a 29-point outing for the Buccaneers, comes in at six. And Travis Kelce, after a 25-point outing, comes in at seven. Some big shakeups after National Tight End Day last week. Number eight, Cole Kmet drops five spots. He's got no touches. Commander's defense had him on lock, and he drops from three to eight. Zach Ertz remains at number nine from pretty sure the third straight week. Hey, Commander's guy, he's good. Number 10, Hunter Henry down to four. Hunter Henry and Cole Kmet, the definition of, oh, they dropped 25 points, 22 points, 20 points. They drop one. They drop two. They drop three. That's just how Hunter Henry and Cole Kmet work. But still, Hunter Henry, Patriots team sucks. He's not too bad. Defenses wise, it's just not the year to have a defense. It's the year to have a good kicker. Defense, Broncos, they remain the top defense. It's incredible to see Pat Surtain Jr., insane cornerback. And this Broncos defensive line, I mean, absolute killers. Love seeing it. And number two, the Steelers D. I mean, this is no real shocker. We knew the Steelers have a great defense, and they've been proving it all year. They're now the number two defense in the league. Packers dropped to three. Vikings dropped to three. Packers dropped to four. They've just been in some high-scoring matchups, which is, you know, sucks to see because the Vikings and Packers each have outstanding defenses. I just saw Xavier McKinney got another damn interception in this Vikings defense. They play their hearts out every single time. Brian Flores has done a great job. 3-4 isn't too bad. 49ers moved from 6-5 from last week. I mean, they got a touchdown last weekend. Good for them. Bears dropped down two spots to six. Bears have just been in some absolute shootouts, and honestly, they deserve to drop two spots after giving up a touchdown to lose the game. Number seven, Texans. They were here last week. Good stuff from them. Bills jumped from 9-8. They're all right. Lions up there in the top 10. Finally, We have all the four NFC North teams, all four in the top 10. Lions, good work. Giants drop down two spots. Giants have a good defense. They don't have a good offense. Let's wrap this up with our kickers. Chris Boswell, your number one kicker, remains at number one. Dude won me my fantasy matchup last weekend. Steelers, great defense, great kicker. Their special teams and defensive units, insane in Pittsburgh. Number two, Austin Siebert of the Commanders. Dude is having a great year. Absolutely outstanding. He remains number two. Kai Fairbairn of the Texans at three, also doing amazing. Brandon Aubrey was four last week, is four this week. When you don't get opportunities on the Cowboys, you can't get fantasy points. Broncos kicker Will Lutz. I mean, we're kind of seeing a common theme here, you know. Broncos kicker, Broncos defense insane. Commanders off. What am I trying to say? You know the Broncos, Will Lutz, pretty good. I'm not even going to go in on it. And Young Hoku remains at six for the Falcons. Chase McLaughlin jumps from eight to seven for the Buccaneers, team he's on. Cameron Dicker at eight, Will Record of the Vikings at nine, and Justin Tucker drops three spots after hardly getting any opportunities with the Ravens and their loss to the Browns. But those are your changes in the top 10. You know, we could even do this every other week or something. I just find it interesting to look at the fantasy changes, because when we get to the final end of the season, you can kind of see the fluctuations and stuff. Because I look at last season, Breece Hall wasn't even in the top 10 all year, and he had like two 40-point games to end the year and finished as the number two running back. So there's just important stats to look at there when you look forward to next season. But I mean, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, they have been the most consistent number ones I've seen all year. But Chris Boswell and the Broncos defense also sneaking in there. And speaking of sneaking in, let's sneak in our Week 9 NFL quick picks before we do our little Halloween special, little surprise Halloween part of the podcast. We've got 14 games, I believe, to get through. Maybe more, maybe less. Who knows? Let's get on right into it. Kicking us off on Thursday Night Football, you do have the Texans visiting the Jets. And look, Texans 6-2. They just lost Stephon Diggs. Nico Collins isn't ready to come back yet. But there's just no way I can give the Jets a win. Okay, and when the Jets are gonna win, they're 2-6, they're gonna win another game. 5-game losing streak every week I pick them. Maybe finally they'll find the connection or something. And this works out good for them, as the Texans are 2-2 on the road. But I mean, Jets haven't won in over a month. They're on a 5-game losing streak. Texans are coming off of a win. You know, I'm going with the Texans. It's the majority pick, but it's hard to pick the Jets with the teams. And they have so many weapons. It's like they just don't glue together at all. After that, Saints take on the Panthers. We get a little NFC South divisional matchup. Saints are 2-6 on a 6-game losing streak. Panthers are 1-7 on a 5-game losing streak. Panthers are home. They're 0-3 at home. I'm gonna be honest. You know, I know that the Saints, they got Alvin Kamara. I know that they got Chris Olave, but the Panthers might have been finally finding their mojo. And, you know, I honestly see a little connection when you give away someone like Deontay Johnson, your team wins. All right. So this might be a bold prediction. I don't know if it'll work out, but the more I think about it, the more I don't know if I actually want to pick the Panthers. You know, I do this live. This is unedited. Gosh, the Panthers. Panthers and Saints both freaking suck. Saints haven't won since starting out 2-0. Gosh, Saints are 1-3 on the road. It hasn't really mattered. I just don't know if I can actually pick the Panthers. Okay, I got to pick the Saints, and I hate to pick the Saints, but I just physically cannot pick the Panthers. They're just so bad. They've given up almost 300 points this year. No other defense is even that close. So I was feeling risky. We're just going to go with the Commanders. Not the Commanders, the Saints. But speaking of the Commanders, Commanders do play the Giants this week, another divisional matchup. This one, the NFC East. Commanders, 6-2, 2-game win streak. They've been incredible. Giants, 2-6, 0-4 at home, which is absolutely insane to me. Commanders are perfectly healthy. Giants have no idea what they're doing. Give me the Commanders all day. It's almost like an easy pick for me, if I'm being honest. Dolphins visit the Bills. And this one, another easy one for me. I got Josh Allen. I got no Dolphins players on my team whatsoever. When I look at the AFC East, Dolphins are 2-5 in second place. Bills are in first at 6-2. Like, there's just, it's not even close. Bills undefeated at home, 3-0. This is a Bills team that is just completely found themselves. Keon Coleman finally getting the connections. They got Amari Cooper now. Khalil Shakir is great. James Cook, Ray Davis, a great backfield. And their defense, they now have a top 10 defense. Give me the Bills all day. After that, Chargers and Browns. Okay, this one's really interesting. You have a Browns team that is 2-6, but now that Jameis Winston has taken over, you know, they upset the Ravens, okay, and they're at home again. There's just something about this Browns team with Jameis Winston behind the helm. It's almost like they got their mojo back, baby. Okay, their libido is spiking, all right? You know what I'm saying, Austin Powers? It's, there's a change of the guard with the Browns. And Chargers, don't get me wrong, they've looked great. Ladd McConkey's finally clicking. Justin Herbert loves what he's doing. J.K. Dobbins is a great running back. They're one of the only defenses to not give up 100 points so far this year. But, man, I'm riding with the Browns. Honestly, I'm going with the Browns. Jameis Winston is a likable guy. Look at what Cedric Tillman was doing. Nick Chubb will at some point have a breakout game. David Njoku, Jerry Jeudy, we already know the Browns have a good defense with Myles Garrett. Let's go Browns over Chargers. After that, Patriots visit the Titans. Yet another terrible matchup. Pats are 2-6. They did come off a win over the Jets, but that's the Jets. They still have a minus 73 point differential, for goodness sake. Titans no better. Actually, the second worst team in the league at 1-6, minus 76 point differential. Titans are 0-3 at home, three-game losing streak. Pats, you know, Drake May is going to be going out. Titans did look good despite getting blown out 52-14, which is weird to say. You know, it's like they do have a connection. They did give up Hopkins. Calvin Ridley was taken over. Man, this is kind of tough. But it might be time. I'm going to give this one to the Titans. Similar to the Browns, I just think, like, you know, you make some changes and you can finally start getting things done. So we're going to go Titans over the Patriots. You got a lot of lower-level teams playing each other this week. It's toss-ups, but Titans are at home. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Cowboys visit the Falcons in our next matchup, and this is hit or miss. This is hit or miss. You're either going to get a good Cowboys team or a bad Cowboys team. And Cowboys, you know, despite the awful record of 3-4, they're still only third in the AFC East. It ain't too bad. And of their three wins, they've all came on the road. Despite being on a two-game losing streak, those losses are to the Lions and the 49ers, two exceptional teams. Falcons, 5-3. They are only 2-3 at home. You know, and they're coming off of a win. They've been looking great. Oh man, this one's tough for me because I feel the Cowboys can really excel. I feel CeeDee Lamb can absolutely cook the Falcons backfield. But when I look at how many points the Cowboys keep giving up, I mean, it's ridiculous. They've given up 198 points. Falcons have put up 194 points. I just think this Falcons offense is going to be too much for the lackluster Cowboys defense. So that's why I think the Falcons are going to be taking this one home. I do have CeeDee Lamb in fantasy. Other than that, I don't really have any Falcons players, but it's tough to ride with the Cowboys. It really is. Raiders visit the Bengals in our next matchup, and it is just this Bengals team. Finally kind of coming to clicking. They're 0-4 at home, okay? All three of their wins have come on the road, which is kind of weird to say. But Ja'Marr Chase is a killer. Chase Brown's a killer. Zach Moss, when he's doing all right. You know, you got T. Higgins in the mix. Joe Burrow, right? He likes to slice and dice it. And this Raiders team, four-game losing streak, 2-4. They are just atrocious. We got to pick the Bengals. The Raiders only have Brock Bowers. That's literally, it's Brock Bowers. And I love Brock Bowers. I'm a huge Brock Bowers fan. It's just not much to do. Not much to do when that's your only guy. So, Brock Bowers and the Raiders, I'm sorry. We're riding with Joe Shiesty. Broncos visit the Ravens in our next matchup. And this one's tricky. Broncos are 5-3. Plus 53-point differential. Two-game win streak. And they're coming into this matchup with the Ravens, who are 5-3. They're now second in the AFC North. They were upset last week. And you know what? I don't think they saw it coming. I really, truly don't believe they saw it coming. And Ravens, out of their five wins, you know, they've gone 2-1 at home. They will be hosting the Broncos. You know, I'm going to give this one to the Ravens. I'm going to give this one to the Ravens. It won't be easy. It won't be easy, but there's something when everyone's saying, like, oh, Zay Flowers is going to be off. All right, oh, Derrick Henry's going to be held in check. It just really makes me think that's not going to happen. It makes me think that the Broncos are actually going to give up a lot of points to the Ravens. We're going to go Ravens over Broncos. I think statistically, if you pick the Ravens more than you pick against them during the season, you'll make more money. Bears visit the Cardinals for the next game, and I'm going with the Bears. All right, I'm going with the Bears. Cardinals, 4-4, do own tiebreakers over 49ers and Seahawks to remain the top team in the NFC West, but they're just 2-2 at home, 2-2 on the road. They're just average all around. As for this Bears team, 4-3, their defense has only given up 119 points. That is the best defense in the NFC. It might be the second or third best in the NFL. I think the Bears going to work the Cardinals all game. I think their defense is going to eat the Cardinals alive. And from the Bears losing on Hail Mary, I think they come back with some ferocity and get a win. Jags visit the Eagles for our next matchup. A little fun matchup here. Eagles are 5-2, 3-game win streak. They are 2-1 at home, which isn't too bad. They do have a plus 39 point differential. Love to see that. Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley doing exceptional. And when you have Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown healthy, Dallas Goedert's going to be coming back. This is a fully healthy Eagles offense and the Jaguars. They struggle here and there. 2-6. They're 0-4 on the road. No Brian Thomas Jr. Travis Etienne's a liability. Give me the Eagles all day. And I think I always pick the Eagles a majority of all my predictions. A big Jalen Hurts, big Saquon Barkley guy in my fantasy football leagues. So we're going with those two. Divisional matchup in the West for the NFC as the Rams visit the Seahawks. I was about to read it as Ravens, but no. The Rams visit the Seahawks. And gosh, I don't know. Seahawks 4-4, minus 5 point differential. 2 wins on the road and at home. There's something with this Rams team. I think the Rams pull off an upset here. No, the Rams are 0-3 on the road. Okay, but they're on a 2-game heater. Puka's back. Cooper's back. Healthy Kyron Williams. All the signs point towards a Rams upset on the road. I think the Seahawks team is just going to split. They seem like a 500 team. You never know who's showing up. Sometimes Jackson Smith and Jigba is going off. Sometimes Kenneth Walker's going for a 30 bomb. Other times, they're barely getting to 10 fantasy points. We're going with the Rams. They have a fully healthy offense now. Lions visit the Packers in our final Sunday slate for 12 at noon. This one, divisional. I feel like this should be Sunday Night Football, and the Vikings own Sunday Night Football. But, I mean, Lions 6-1, Packers 6-2. Packers have gone decent at home, 3-1. Lions have gone 3-0 on the road. Gosh, Lions are putting up 234 points this season, an insane amount coming off a 52-14 blowout. They're on a 5-game heater. Packers are on a 4-game heater. But out of both those teams, I hate the Packers more. Hate the Packers more. I was going to say I hate the Lions more or less. Gosh, I can't even mix up my words. I hate them both so much. But we're going to go with the Lions. For any reason, not really. Not really. I'm just not a big Packers guy. So if I'm going to have to choose between two evils, I'll choose the team that I feel is eviler. And with that, Sunday Night Football, the Minnesota Vikings 5-2 with a plus 51-point differential. You know, it's been some tough losses. Been some tough losses. We lose on a game-winning field goal to the Lions. We then lose on a just no-call. I'm not even going to say a missed call, just a no-call. They just didn't even call a blatant face mask. It was BS, but we get gifted with the Colts. Colts just bench Anthony Richardson, which I would have rather had in, but you got Joe Flacco in. They're 4-4. They have gone just only 1-3 on the road, so that gives me some confidence. As much as I might put Josh Downs in, because I don't know how much I trust our backfield, you know I'm riding with the Vikings. We pick the Vikings every week, and hey, if you were picking the Vikings every week, you'd pick them 5 correctly, 2 incorrectly, which isn't too bad. Excited to see how all the boys perform, how everyone does. But yeah, we're riding with the Vikings. I'm so glad this is at night because, oh my goodness, I am sure I'm going to be feeling it after my electric Halloween weekend. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our final matchup of the week. And son of a gun, the Chiefs, they're at home, Monday Night Football, 7-0, plus 50-point differential, haven't freaking lost. Haven't damn lost. Oh, man, they host the Buccaneers. Will Baker and his 4-4 Bucks finally be the team to do it? I doubt it. We're picking the Chiefs every single week. I'm just learning statistically it's best to pick the Chiefs. All right, it just seems like the safe bet at this point that the Chiefs are always going to win, which I don't enjoy. I certainly don't enjoy at all that the Chiefs are going to win, but I mean, it's just getting to this point where it's like they just win and win and win. And the Buccaneers, a team that you hate to say it, they're hit or miss whenever they're stepping on the field. So we'll ride with the Chiefs. Kareem Hunt's been balling well. Patrick Mahomes is just, he has the refs on his side. That's what we're going to go with. So should be an exciting week for football. I don't know how much I'm going to be watching Sunday. Actually, I might be watching a good amount, but it's going to feel like a recovery day of sorts, if you know what I mean, post Halloween weekend. And speaking of which, Halloween comes out, and when this episode is live, so if you listen to this on the day it airs, it is Halloween 2024. And in honor of Halloween 2024, I decided to rank my top 10 Halloween costumes I have ever worn since I was a little boy. And fun fact, I could only come up with exactly 10. I had to ask my mom, look through baby pictures, see what you can find. So this is Zachary Ruger, your host, top 10 Halloween costumes he's ever worn. In honor of Halloween, here you go. So throughout my 22 years of existence, I have worn many costumes, some good, some, you know, less than good. So let's go through them all. And actually, this is gonna be a little trip down memory lane for me myself, so this will actually be pretty fun. So coming in at number 10, we have a Vikings player, and I mean every single guy ever has just thrown on a jersey and said they were something. But I think I actually went out trick-or-treating with some of my friends. I think I had a Greg Jennings jersey on back when he was on the Vikings for like one season. Very mediocre, very lame. It's not a real Halloween costume. That's not a real Halloween costume. You say, oh, you're a player. No, it's okay to be a player when I think you're 7 and under. After that, grow up, get a real costume. That's how I view it. Number 9, dinosaur. I don't even remember this one. Apparently, I was dressed up in this cute little dinosaur costume, and it zipped over my head. I had like a spine and a tail, and I hardly remember it, but I think I saw a picture of it. I think it was red, and I went trick-or-treating, and I'm sure I was adorable, and I'm sure I was the cutest dinosaur around. But I mean, you know, it's nothing new. It's the old, it's the cliche, and it wasn't that adorable, okay? Because we're going to get up there, and there's some that are absolutely adorable. Number 8, race car driver. This one I will actually remember. I can't like visualize, like remember, but I can remember. The story is I set out, and I had a NASCAR helmet on with a... Actually, might have been like an old school race car driver hat, but anyways, it had a visor on it and everything, and I was heading down my driveway. I think we were actually my friend's house, like our family friend's house driveway, and me and my buddy were out about to go, and I tripped and fell like right as we went down, and I bashed my head and absolutely shattered the visor, broke like part of the helmet, and all my parents were saying like, if he didn't have the helmet on, he would have like gotten a concussion or something. So it's weird to think, you know, God had my back right there. He's like, you know what, here you go, little Zachary, you have a little helmet on, you'll do wonderful. And it ended up saving me. So thankfully I'm here because I decided to be a NASCAR race car driver that year. And other than that, I think I had like a white bodysuit on or something like that. Like, you know what the old school race car driver was? I was like a 1920s race car driver, for goodness sakes. That's what I probably looked like. Number 7, a fireman. I was a fireman, and I think it was actually, kind of remember this. I had the hat. I had the whole getup. I was a full-on fireman, but I think it was like made of plastic or something. Like, I think it was made of plastic or something, because I think I got super like, or like felt like when you like try and like, when I tried to move, it was like I couldn't move my arms fully because it was like this, I'm trying to describe like this plastic or what I'm thinking of, but I can't really put it together. But I was a fireman. I was adorable. A lot of these are kid costumes, because you know, you kind of go through that middle school, high school phase where you don't dress up. You just don't dress up or anything. And as far as like Halloween costumes, it also really goes how you're really like the costume kind of goes with how well your Halloween went. And I can't really remember trick-or-treating that much in the fireman costume. All I remember is I might have had an axe or something. I think I did have an axe of some kind, but I don't think I was allowed to carry it around. I had a sword, actually, and I think I wanted to carry that around. But fireman comes in at 7. It was okay. Number 6, a lion. This was Baby Zach. I was a little Simba, you know, like the circle of life, and you hold them up. I probably looked like Lily in episode 1 of Modern Family. That's what I probably looked like. I was a little baby Zach, you know, the big mane on me and anything, and little did they know I grew into a big old lion, an absolute conqueror. But as far as memories go, all I have is a little picture, little baby Zachary in his little lion costume. Adorable. Number five, this is one of my favorite ones, a rapper. And I don't know what rapper I was. But all I know is I had on this like blue and black, like kind of cool design jacket because it was kind of chilly out. And I put beads around my neck, you know, like the beads you get, like, you know, Mardi Gras, and they throw the beads, like those types of beads. And I had a hat on and I put it sideways. And every house I went to, I said I was a rapper. And I remember some houses were asking me to rap for them. Honestly, I think I was in fourth grade, maybe fifth grade. Sixth grade, either fourth or fifth, I believe it was. And I remember I was with my two friends, Casey and Chase, and they were going as hockey players, so they were on rollerblades. And I was like, well, I'm not gonna go alone. So I ran with them the entire night as they were on rollerblades. And I probably lost 3 pounds and then gained it all back eating all the candy. So that was super fun. I fairly enjoyed that. But being a rapper, definitely up there. And it was so goofy. Like, it was so goofy. Like, a rapper? What? I don't know. Maybe I was Eminem, 2 Chainz, something like that. Who knows? Number four, a cow. And you know, I recall, I think from the pictures, I was 4 years old and we went with my neighbors, Mason and Josh, and we went downtown somewhere. I can't recall where it was. My neighbor's mom and my mom, and I was a little cow. And for some reason, I always wanted to crawl around like a cow. And I remember my mom could go, you can't be crawling around outside like a cow. But I was so adorable. I looked like a little baby cow. And everyone we passed was probably like, Zach, you were the cutest cow I've ever seen. You were adorable. And it's the best costume that I've ever seen. And, you know, I was like, you know what, guys, you got to chill. You know, I know I'm an adorable little cow, but I mean, there's not much I can do. I'm just a little boy. But I don't know, cow costume works. I have this little cow still that I'm pretty sure is what molded my costume after. So that's pretty cool. So a cow, it's up there. But now we get into my top three, and they've been my last three Halloween costumes. You want to guess what they are? Starting at number three, we have Batman. That is right, my sophomore year of college, I decided I was going to be Batman. You know, it was last minute, I'm at the store, I'm kind of like, should I just be fucking Batman? Should I just pull the trigger and go and be Batman? And I did it, and it was a hit. It was an absolute hit. I remember I fell down the stairs at one point, and one of my guys I know, named Jack, he got a video of me, and he's just like, Batman, give me some. And I'm like, justice, as I saw like falling down the stairs. I just hold like one fist in the air. Super funny. Any party I went to, everyone was just like, oh my gosh, it's Batman. And it was so goofy, and I looked super jacked in my big costume. It was so bulky, though, to carry around. And, you know, there's this belt that came with it, and I had to, like, pin that on me to keep it up. It was super funny, though. And, you know, Batman is such a go-to costume. If you don't have a costume, just be Batman. It's so funny. If you're in a huge friend group and someone's like, oh, if no one else is Batman, choose to be Batman. It's such a funny go-to costume. It was, that was a fun Halloween. Let me tell you, that was a fun Halloween. Crazy Halloween. I recall we went to one party and some guy got stabbed just as we were walking in. And then I watched the guy run out and he was being chased by a group of five guys. It was absolutely crazy. You know, and, you know, being Batman, I probably should have went and saved him, but he was the one wielding a knife. Or I probably should have attacked him, but, you know, I probably would have killed him. You know, I'm too aggressive compared to Batman. My number two costume of all time, it was last year's. It was Anakin Skywalker. Such a hit. So dope. I love me a little Anakin Skywalker. And the thing is, you know, I had the getup, I had the tunic, the hair looked like Anakin's, I had a red lightsaber, so I was more of like a Darth Vader, actually. I was like Anakin, but he has the red lightsaber. I looked so badass. Everyone was complimenting me. I was a Jedi master, Jedi warrior. And Anakin, I mean, one of the greatest characters of all time, Anakin Skywalker, especially when he, you know, goes to the Jedi temple with all the kids. And, you know, we'll just leave that out of the story. But yeah, it was a pretty solid costume. I'm trying to remember last Halloween. Actually, I think there was a party. Where was their party at? Actually, we went to some girls we know. They had a party at their house, which was super fun. I think I got a bunch of group photos there. They might be throwing another party this year we might have to go to. And then I know this year my boy Casey's going to be throwing a party. Probably Halloween night we're going to the bars. But Anakin, you know, I was actually up in the cities with my girlfriend and we went to a party. And, you know, I was getting compliments. They're like, Anakin Skywalker. You know, I had my little lightsaber. Love that costume, Anakin Skywalker. Number two costume of all time. But ladies and gentlemen, that leads me to my current costume, my best costume I've ever done. And if you want to guess what it is, baby, all I got to ask is, can I ask you one question? Can I ask you a question? Do I make you horny, baby? Do I make you ready? Do I make you swinging, darling? Yeah, that's right. This year we are going as Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. You know it, baby. You know, Chagadelic, we're going to be swinging groovy, baby. Yeah, I am so pumped. I'm so pumped this year. I ordered my costume a month ago. I have finally gotten it all set up. I got the glasses, you know, my similar color hair. I can move my hair like it. I did buy some bobby pins just so I can kind of clip it. Because, you know, I got the vest, but the vest is kind of loose. And they have, like, the puffy thing you put around your neck. And, you know, you can kind of see the string. So I want to get that covered up. But, I mean, you know, I got the glasses. I got some nice shoes. I got these black dress shoes that work perfectly with it. I am so pumped. From Thursday, probably... I have class until 1:45 and then I'm staying after until I have a ride. So probably at like, I'd say probably like 3:30, maybe 4 o'clock on Thursday, Halloween, until I'm going to say Sunday morning, I'm going to be Austin Powers. That's right. You're going to get 3 full days of Zachary Ruger as Austin Powers, baby. Yeah. And I'm actually planning to wake up early, and I'm recording this. It's 9:20 at night. Pre-Halloween night, I'm planning to somehow wake up at 4 in the morning, go to the gym, eat breakfast, and then watch all 3 Austin Powers before my class. So then I can get all the mannerisms right, all the dance moves. You already know I'm going to be thrown into a dance circle. And everyone's going to be like, dance, Austin, dance. You know, I'm going to have to break out some of the finger gun moves. I'm going to hit like a sprinkler or something. I don't know. It's going to be groovy. It's going to be Shagadelic. But that's my number one Halloween costume by far. So guys, let me know what your guys' favorite Halloween costumes you've ever done are. And I'm sure you've all done a lot more than me. But I think this is going to be a thing. Every Halloween from now on, I'm going to be dressing up. And as for this Halloween, well, we'll have to see what memories we make on there. But that's all we got for my Halloween costumes. There is one more thing I wanted to touch on before we drop our UFC Edmonton predictions, and that is, of course, the top 10 new things in pop culture. So, kicking us off, number one, the new trailer for Squid Game Season 2 releases on Halloween. I'm excited for Squid Game Season 2. The only real issue is it's been so long. It's really been so long. I feel like it's just, you know, you gotta have shows coming out one year after the other. You know, with these other shows, they take forever. You know, it's just, and you just kind of forget about them. I think that's what happened with Squid Games. You kind of forgot about it, but I'll be excited to see the trailer, see what's been going on with, I can't remember our main character's name, but the ending of the first season of Squid Game, oh my gosh, what a cliffhanger. I was so pumped. Number two, Neon, the film company, is pushing a FYC campaign to nominate Nicolas Cage for Best Supporting Actor for Long Legs. That boy was goofy as hell in Long Legs. I do not recommend watching it. That movie was scary as could be. I don't rock with it. It was so demonic for some reason. I'll pass on it. I'm sorry, Nicolas Cage. Maybe you can get an actor's award, but it's too demonic for me. Number three, Roofman will release on October 3rd, 2025 in theaters. The film follows a robber who lived in a Toys R Us store and broke into more than 60 McDonald's, then emptied the cash register after herding staff into freezers. It'll star Channing Tatum, Kirsten Dunst, and Peter Dinklage. What? You know, I know we say, like, Hollywood, stop coming up with repeats and stuff, but this type of movie? I mean, what happened to Channing Tatum? He used to be so good, and, you know, he's getting Magic Mike, he was getting the, what was the one called? 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, and now he's just in these goofy movies. Kirsten Dunst is all right, and Peter Dinklage, one of the greatest actors of all time. Love me a little Peter Dinklage. Number four, a Jack Ryan movie is in the works with John Krasinski set to reprise his role. The film may get a theatrical release. I have a lisp now all of a sudden from all my talking. I never have seen Jack Ryan. You know, I'm more of a Reacher guy, but my mom has seen Jack Ryan. She said it was good. You know, I rock with John Krasinski. Good director, good on The Office, good in some movies I've seen. I might give this a shot. We'll have to see, though. We'll have to see. Number five, the first poster for Steven Soderbergh's Presence has been released. It is described as a horror movie shot from the perspective of a supernatural entity. Currently has an 89% Rotten Tomatoes. The trailer releases tomorrow. Well, that's not very scary, is it? Is that very scary? Like, I get to be this supernatural entity the entire time? I mean, that's kind of good. I feel like, actually, I'm kind of interested in seeing this movie. That means I won't get jump scared, right? That means I'm the person jump scaring. Ooh, this is kind of, I'm the evilness in the film. Ooh, I don't want to be the evilness, actually. But I don't want to be facing it. Oh, gosh, I'm torn. Maybe I'll watch the trailer. Probably not the movie. Number six, Lily Gladstone and Bryan Cranston have been cast in a new action thriller called Lone Wolf. The film follows a troubled vet struggling with addiction who is recruited by a contractor for a covert government plot to assassinate a high-level politician. Seems all right. Seems like a movie I'd watch on HBO Max with my parents. That's really what it feels like to me. But maybe it's good. Maybe it's good. Who knows? Who knows? Number seven, Deadpool and Wolverine will release on Disney Plus on November 12th. I just find that absolutely insane that that movie came out in July and is finally coming out in November. Meanwhile, you have Joker 2, which ran for 3 weeks and is already out to watch on streaming services. Ridiculous. Just ridiculous. But Wolverine and Deadpool was absolutely phenomenal. I encourage everyone to watch that, and I'll probably have to rewatch it on Disney Plus somewhere. Number eight, first look at Marvel Zombies. It'll be a 4-episode TVMA event series. It'll include Shang-Chi, Yelena, Kate Bishop, Red Guardian, Ms. Marvel, and more, releasing October 25th on Disney+. Yeah, probably not. I'm gonna be honest, you know, not for me, but there's people out there. There are people out there who will enjoy this, who will watch this. I just don't think it's going to be one of them. Oh, they released a lot of trailers, or they have a lot of shows coming out. They have What If Season 3 coming out in December, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man coming out in January, Daredevil Born Again in March, Ironheart in June, Eyes of Wakanda in August, Wonder Man in December, a lot of Disney Plus shows, but I'm more of a movie guy. I've always been a Marvel movie guy compared to the Disney Plus shows. Number nine. Oh, they released all the teasers. That's what's been taking up the whole damn field. Number nine, Sophie Turner and Lucy Boynton are in running to potentially play Laura Croft in the live-action Tomb Raider series. Ooh, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is developing the series. I've heard a lot of good things about Laura Croft and Tomb Raider. It's very popular game. Sophie Turner, maybe, but this other chick called Lucy Boynton, she looks like she could play a very good Laura Croft. Never played the game, but I've kind of heard about it. And number 10, what should we end with? Something good. What's something good? Here we go. Jessica Chastain, Brendan Fraser, Bryan Cranston, and Al Pacino will star in the JFK conspiracy thriller Assassination, directed by Barry Levinson. The film follows a journalist who suspects Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone and sets out to find the real killer of JFK. Sign me up. This is the definition of Hollywood putting the truth in front of us. Yeah, no shit. No shit, he didn't act alone. The government killed him. It was the mob. It was the high elites. Trust me. Believe me. You know, we're going to do a conspiracy episode coming up with maybe one or two people. You know, I got two friends that really want to do a conspiracy episode. We'll talk about that then. But as for that show, color me interested. That's what I'm going to say. Color me interested. And I'll tell you what else you can color me interested in. That is UFC Edmonton. That's right, guys. We have an absolutely jam-packed 14-fight event going out at Rogers Place in UFC in Edmonton, California. We got a lot of fights to talk about, a lot of predictions to drop. We're 267 and 170 this year. We're almost plus 100. We went 10-3 last weekend. We nailed the main card 5-5 with how every fight would end. The only round we didn't get right was I had Ilia Topuria with a round 2 knockout, and he did it in round 3. So we were dead spot on last weekend, and I'm excited to get back into it. Got a lot of fights to talk about. Let's get right on into it and wrap up this Halloween special. Ooh, spooky predictions. Kicking off this absolutely jam-packed Canadian card, we head to the women's flyweight division. Of course, I mean, what shock could we have here? Women opening the card. Jamie Lynn Horth takes on Ivana Petrovic. Jamie Lynn Horth 6-1, Ivana 7-1. 5'8 to 5'7 does give Ivana 1 inch in height, and she has a notable 4 inches in reach, 70 inches to 66 inches. Southpaw stands for Ivana, Orthodox for Jamie Lynn Horth. Jamie closes as the minus 200 favorite, Ivana the plus 165 underdog. Let's start with Jamie Lynn Horth. She is the hometown hero, you could say, 34 years old from British Columbia, Canada. Out of her 6 wins, 3 KOs and 2 submissions. Currently 1-1 in the UFC. She made her debut in 2023, picked up a win over Haley Cowan by unanimous decision, fought last in December, lost to Veronica Hardy by split decision, where they had the exact same number of significant strikes, 43 apiece, and each landed 1 takedown. That was a close fight, and I mean, she didn't lose by much, but I just hardly remember. I hardly remember. Only has had two fights in the UFC. Nothing of real notoriety, if you will, that I can use to remember her. Ivana Petrovic, does she ring a bell? Somewhat. She rings a bit more of a bell than Jamie Lynn Horth, but Ivana, 30 years old, from Norway. Wow, a rare Norwegian fighter. Of her 7 wins, 3 KOs, and 3 submissions. Both these ladies, their losses by decision. Ivana debuted last summer, lost the unanimous decision to Luiana Carolina, came back in April, got a round 3 arm triangle over Leong Na. That was in April, UFC Vegas 91, I want to say that was. Really leaned on her grappling in this one. Also faced some grappling. Got out grappled in round 1, but turned it around in round 2. Got the finish in round 3. Ivana, you know, I guess I know her more than Jamie Lynn Horth. Jamie is the hometown girl, though. That's the thing. I just love picking fighters from Canada. But the last time we were in Canada, UFC 297, no Canadian men won. No Canadian men won, only the women won. I'm almost feeling like this is the opposite case, in my opinion, where I think maybe the women lose and all the guys win. I don't know. We'll have to see. But this is a toss-up for me. So, gosh, I don't know. Nothing really rides on this. I'm not betting any money, but still the pride of predicting correctly. Ivana does have the 4-inch reach, does have more finishes. You know what? She's fought more recent than Jamie Lynn. We're going to give this one to Ivana Petrovic. We're going to say by decision, but be careful. We are in Canada, so if it does go to decision, don't be surprised if they favor the Canadian fighters. After that, we head to the men's bantamweight division as another Canadian is back in action as you have Chad Ann Hellinger taking on Cody Gibson. Cody Gibson, the runner-up of 2 Ultimate Fighters ago, I want to say it was. Chad, I recognize his name. I think he fought on Dana's Contender Series, if I'm not mistaken. Chad the Monster and Hellinger, 13-7. Cody the Renegade Gibson, 21-10. 5'10" to 5'6" gives Cody 4 inches in height, and he has an insane 7 inches in reach, 71-64. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Chad is the underdog here, plus 145. Cody is the favorite at minus 175. Chad, 37 years old, from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Of his 13 wins, 7 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been submitted 6 times. That is absolutely outstanding to me. 2-2 in the UFC, debuted in 2022, had a knockout over Jesse Strader in his debut, then lost the decision to Altenge, got submitted by Jose Johnson, last fought in March, where he won a unanimous decision over Charlampis Grigiau, who I believe was actually recently cut from the UFC. So was Matthias Nicolau, who recently lost to Usyk Almabayev, and Robel Despange. Should have touched on that earlier. But Chad, you know, he's coming off of a win, but I mean, the submission game, that is where he lacks. And, you know, he is in Canada, but he is unfortunately the underdog. His opponent, the favorite, 37 as well, Cody Gibson. He hails from Oklahoma. Of his 21 wins, 7 KOs and 5 submissions. Of his 10 losses, he has been submitted 4 times. So the submissions, this is their weakness. Cody Gibson had a stint in the UFC from 2014 to 2015, went 1-3, came back in August of last year, fight of the night against Brad Katona, lost, came back in March, lost to Miles Johns, but then July of this year, picked up a shocking arm triangle finish in round number 1. Now, Cody Gibson, I don't expect much out of him, but he has the reach, he has the takedown ability. And Chad honestly hasn't looked that impressive as of late. Chad's weakness is the takedown. That's what Cody specializes in. I think we play another spoiler to a Canadian here, actually. I'm not going with all the Canadians tonight. I'm saying Cody Gibson beats Chad and Hellinger. And there's some cards where I love to pick all the people from that region of the world. I just think Canada is just too close to the United States to really get a difference. Similar to Mexico, almost. I mean, you saw last time we were at the Sphere, no freaking Mexican fighters won. So Cody Gibson, I'm going to give this one to you, and I'm actually going to say by submission. Cody Gibson with a round 1 submission, or round 2. A little shocking stuff right there. Bantamweight division, we're staying there as Serhiy Saday takes on Garrett Armfield. Serhiy Saday, 10-2 professionally. Garrett Armfield, 10-4. 5'11" to 5'6" gives Serhiy 5 inches in height, and he has 2 inches in reach. Switch stance for Serhiy Saday, orthodox for Garrett Armfield. Garrett Armfield, I always see him posting on Twitter. I think I follow him on Twitter. He's a funny guy. He's a pretty funny guy. But it's a tough test here. Real tough test here. Surjay Sidhe, the -165 favorite. 28 years old from Ontario, Canada. Of his 10 wins, 6 KOs and 2 subs. Both of his losses have come by decision. Debuted in the UFC at the last Canadian card, where he lost a close split decision to Ramon Tavares. Similar enough, his win on Damas Katera series last September of 2023, he got a round one knockout over Ramon Tavares, but that was judged as premature, so they ended up giving a rematch, and Ramon got the better of him. But Surjay Sidhe, legit as they come, 28 years old, he's from Canada, and he's an absolute killer, man. Garrett, +140 underdog, 28 years old as well. He is from Florida. Of his 10 wins, also 6 KOs and 2 subs. Now, of his 4 losses, he has been submitted 3 times. 2-2 in the UFC, both those losses by submission. 1 win by decision, 1 win by knockout. Good for him. Last win did come at the last Canadian card, where he beat Brad Katona. Now, he did fight in June, and in a fight he was up 2-0. He loses to Brady Highstand in the final round, gets submitted. So Garrett isn't coming in with the most positive momentum. And from what I saw with Surjay Sidhe, that dude is pretty legit. I think the power does lay with Garrett Armfield, but if Surjay Sidhe can lean on the takedowns, get it to the ground, that's where he's going to capitalize. So I'm going to give this to the Canadian boy, Surjay Sidhe. But I just don't know what these fight nights, man. These are always such toss-ups. I do much better on pay-per-views usually. So Surjay Sidhe will ride with you, but this should be a close one. Going from the 135 to the 265, we got a heavyweight bout here between the where are these boys at currently? The number 13th ranked Alexander Romanov and the number 15th ranked Rodrigo Nascimento. King Kong, Alexander Romanov, 17-3. Rodrigo Zecolmea, Nascimento, 11-2 with 1 no contest. Both men are 6'2". A 5-inch reach advantage for Rodrigo, 80-75. Southpaw with that left for Romanov, orthodox with that right for Rodrigo Nascimento. Let's start with the number 13th ranked Alexander Romanov. Alexander is the +110 underdog here. 33 years old from Moldova, but now lives and trains in Maryland. Good for him. Decided to move to the United States. Of his 17 wins, 5 KOs and 10 subs. Now, of his 3 losses, he has been submitted. He's been knocked out, and he's lost a majority decision. That's been Alexander Romanov's career. Pretty interesting run in the UFC so far. After starting out his career 16-0, he lost a bad decision to Marcin Tybura, then was skyrocketed to the top and had to take on Alexander Volkov, who TKO'd him in just over 2 minutes. So that was no challenge. Last win came in July of 2023, where he fought Blagoy Ivanov, took a year off, came back in June, and was fed to Holton Almeida, who also dispatched of him, similar to Volkov, with a 2 minute and 27 second submission. So Romanov's losses are to some of the best in the division. The number 6, the number 3, and the number 9. Okay, so Romanov, very talented. He is a grapple guy. Okay, I want you all to know that. He's a grapple guy, as thick and through as they come. You know, all the fights he's lost, it was he was either attacking for the submission, or not the submission, the takedown, and it didn't work, and he lost on the feet. So if he can get this to the ground, that's where he'll have success. He has taken on the favorite, -135, Rodrigo Nascimento, 31 years old, from Brazil. Of his 11 wins, 2 KOs, and 6 submissions. Both of his losses have come by knockout, those being a 45-second loss to Chris Daukaus and a Round 3 Fight Night main event against Derek Lewis. That was back in May. Before that, he had been on a little 3-fight win streak. I mean, he's had a submission win. He's had an overturned TKO in the UFC. You know, biggest win probably over Aliyar Latifi. Rodrigo hasn't done much. He had great success in the grappling department against Derek Lewis before losing on the feet. Just got absolutely gassed. Romanov also has a pretty weak gas tank. But when it comes to straight grappling ability, I'm going to go with Romanov here. I think he can get a TKO victory here on the ground, but if he gets caught in a submission, it's game over. This is one of those fights where these guys are going to gas. It's whoever winds up on top. Any submission you get is going to be a Kimura, rear naked choke, guillotine. You're not going to be seeing any, arm triangle. Even I can really see an arm triangle from either of these men, but we're going to go with Romanov. Look, it's crazy. We have a Moldovan and a Brazilian fighting on an Edmonton card. I just find that absolutely goofy, but I do predict the winner of this to be Alexander Romanov. Winner isn't really poised for much. You know, they might fight up, but if anything, they're going to be taking on a knockout artist and probably get dropped. Fun one next in the men's featherweight division. I'm actually excited for this one as Jack Shore takes on Yusuf Zalal. Jack Shore, actually his family owns their own gym in Wales where he is from. Yusuf Zalal, fun fact, he was actually cut from the UFC and has worked his way back. Jack the Tank Shore, 17-2. Yusuf the Moroccan Devil Zalal, 15-5-1. 5'10-5'8 does give Yusuf the 2-inch height advantage and a 1-inch 72-71 reach advantage. Switch stance for Zalal, orthodox for Jack Shore. Jack Shore the +190 underdog, Yusuf the -230 favorite, I think is actually the biggest favorite on this card. Actually, no, there's one other fighter that's a big favorite, but all the odds on all these fights are dead even. No one gets into the +300. No one gets into the -300. It's a lot of +100s, +/-100s. Very close fights on all these matchups. Jack Shore, 29 years old from Wales, as I mentioned. Of those 17 wins, 4 KOs, 9 subs, so 13 of 17 wins by finish. Not too bad. Both of his losses, he has been finished, one by submission, one by knockout, both in round two. But last time he lost was a TKO due to injury, so he wasn't actually knocked down. Did have to take on the deadly Johannesson Brito, and Brito opened a gash on his leg. Very weird stoppage, don't want to hold that against him. But I will say his loss in July of 2022 by submission to Ricky Simon was pretty bad. Last win came in March of 2023, where he got submitted Makwan Amerikani. So Jack Shore hasn't been too active, two fights since 2022. And I mean, came in red hot, two submissions off the bat, then split decision, then a big win over Timur Valev. Then he starts taking on top-level guys, and he starts running into trouble. And Jack Shore's big in Cage Warriors. That's where he came from. And this will just be another tough test for him as he takes on the Moroccan devil, Yusuf Zalal. 28 years old, of course, from Morocco. Does live and train in Denver, though, at same gym as Curtis Blades, Corey Sanhagen. What's it? Elevation. That's what it is. Yusuf, of those 15 wins, has 4 KOs and 8 subs, and his 5 losses never been finished. Yusuf came into the UFC in 2020 and started off 3-0, all boring decisions, then lost 3 straight. One was actually a decision to Ia Topuria, where he had one moment where he almost submitted him, then lost a close one to Sungwoo Choi, lost an even closer one to Sean Woodson, then 2022 had a majority draw against Amon Blackshear. Gets cut, leaves the UFC, has to forge his own trail, and picks up 3 good wins on the independent, including winning a championship in a promotion. Comes back short notice against Billy Quarantillo in March and shockingly submits him in round number 2. Comes back in August and submits Jarno Ahrens in 3 minutes and 52 seconds, earning himself a performance bonus. 5 straight wins. All 5 of them finishes. He's been on a run of a lifetime, and I don't think it stops here. Truly, I don't think it stops here. I think Yusuf Zalal continues this momentum, brings the pressure. I think Jack Shore might even land a takedown this one, but Yusuf, clearly the submissions are working. I'm predicting a Yusuf Zalal submission in this one, and I'm excited for it, man. This guy used to be irrelevant, has some momentum. There have been some really good feel-good stories in 2024. Yusuf Zalal is one of them. That's who I'm giving this fight to. Dropping back down to our favorite division, the bantamweight division. No, it's not. It's just the most popular division. It's not the most popular, but I feel like we always have a lot of bantamweight fights on every card we have. Canadian favorite Charles Air Jourdain takes on Victor La Mangosta Henry. Wow, if I were to tell you Victor is just simply from California with a crazy nickname like La Mangosta, I'm sure you wouldn't believe me. Charles Jourdain, 15-8-1. Victor Henry, 24-6 with one no contest. 5'9-5'7 gives Charles 2 inches in height, and he has 1 inch in reach, 69-68. Switch dance for both of these gentlemen. -115 for Charles, -105 for Victor. The odds makers, they couldn't give you an underdog. This is about as even as it comes. The Canadian from Quebec, 28 years old, Canadian-born Charles Jourdain. He is, you know, he's the hometown guy. He's going to be the favorite. Of his 15 wins, 13 finishes, 8 KOs, 5 subs. Of his 8 losses, he has been finished twice. And as of late, you know, Charles has just been running into tough competition. You know, starts off his UFC career in 2019, very green. All right, drops a decision to some irrelevant guy. Then has a fight of the year candidate against Doohoo Choi. Knocks him out in round two, one of the craziest two-round fights you'll ever see. Split decision loss to Andre Feely. Split draw against Josh Cuiabo. Then gets a good knockout of Marcelo Rojo in 2021. Gets submitted, you know, picks up a cool decision here. Quick submission round one there. Runs into Shane Burgos in 2022 and Nathaniel Wood, two absolute killers. They beat him. You know, 2023 treats him well. 2-0, big win over Cron Gracie, submission in 3 minutes over Ricardo Ramos. But 2024, close split decision to Shad Woodson, which he handsomely lost. Then, unfortunately, in June, had to take on Gene Silva. And if anyone knows who Gene Silva is, he's an absolute murderer. Okay, knocks out Charles Jourdain for the first time in his career. Brutal uppercut. It was a brutal uppercut. But Charles Jourdain landed three takedowns, had a bit of success, and I do think he will have some more success here as he takes on Victor Henry, who is jumping up from bantamweight to featherweight. Minus 105, Victor Henry is 37, as I mentioned, from California. Of his 24 wins, he has 15 finishes, 7 KOs and 8 subs, and of his 6 losses, he's never been finished. Currently 3-1 with one no contest in the UFC. Went over Ryony Barcelos in his debut, then lost the decision to Rafael Sonso. Won a split decision over Tony Gravely. Had a no contest against Javid Bashrat after getting nutshotted. And recently picked up a huge win over Rani Yaha in April with a round 3 TKO. I won't lie, Rani Yaha is pushing 40, might actually be 40, and that was not the most impressive win by Victor Henry. Didn't get performance bonus, could have probably finished him at better points, but he got done. Got his first finish in the UFC, that was in April. And as far as I've seen from Charles Jourdain, he's had a luck issue. And he got a new tattoo, he's back in Canada. I won't lie. Okay, I won't lie to you. He has not had much success in Canada. I'm actually looking. I don't think he's won in Canada. Where was Homan Aldana? Where did this take place? This was at the Apex. I don't know. Where was Dos Anjos and Lee? This one. Oh, so this is only the second time he's fighting in Canada. Never mind. He lost his first time fighting in Canada. You know what? I'm a Charles Jourdain fan. I always love seeing him. He is a cool dude. And I'm going to say he beats Victor Henry here. Also, you know, Victor Henry going up from bantamweight to featherweight. I think he might get a reality hit once those punches start landing. His last wins are over aging veterans. Meanwhile, Charles Jourdain has been taking on the top killers outside the top 15 at featherweight. You know, I think Charles Jourdain will hang in there with them. Maybe even get a finish. That's who I'm riding with. Following that, we head to our women's flyweight division as the number 14th ranked Jasmine Jasu Davicius will be taking on the number 13th ranked Ariana Da Silva. Gosh, I didn't even know Ariana Da Silva was ranked. Ariana, Queen of Violence Da Silva, 17-9. Jasmine Jasu Davicius, 11-3. Ariana Da Silva, plus 170. Jasmine from Ontario, minus 205. Actually, minus 205. Wow, so she's in the 200s. 5'7 to 5'6 gives Jasmine 1 inch in height, and she has 1 inch reach. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Ariana Da Silva ranked number, what did we decide? Number 13. You know, she's 30 years old from Brazil. Of her 17 wins, 6 KOs, 4 subs. Of her 9 losses, been KO'd 4 times. Da Silva, been with the UFC for 5 years now, has fought in Joanne Wood, Molly McCann, Luana Carolina, Antonio Shevchenko, Priscilla Cachoeira. Last win came in December of last year where she got a round 2 armbar, had one fight in April, and unfortunately had to take on killer Karine Silva, who beat her over all 3 rounds. But Ariana Da Silva is very talented, formerly Ariana Lipsky. And as far as her run so far, I mean, since September of 2021, she's gone 4-2. All right, 4-2. You know, she's had some rough losses, you know, multiple KO losses, I will say. You know, we mentioned she's had 4 KO losses. 3 of those have came in the UFC. But she's hunting here, looking to get a win, but I don't know if it's coming. I don't know if it's coming. You may be the Queen of Violence, but you're taking on someone in Jasmine Jasu Davicius, who's just been on an incredible run. She's the favorite, 35 years old, from Ontario, Canada. Of her 11 wins, only 2 KOs, only 2 subs. But, I mean, wow. 10 fights of hers have gone to decision. So a decision machine. But I do want to say she's had some great performances. Only losses are to Natalie Silva and Tracy Cortez, who are the number 6 and number 12 fighters in the division. Neither of them could even finish her. She landed takedowns in both of those. But, I mean, she's pretty much manhandled everyone. She's fought and holds a big win over Miranda Maverick when they were in Canada for UFC 289. He's on a two-fight win streak currently, 2-0 in 2024. She got a big win over Priscilla Castaneda last time she was in Canada. Then at UFC Denver in July, picked up a dominant win over Fatima Klein. Actually had 8 minutes control time in that. Wow. So yeah, we're around with the hometown girl, Jasmine here. Her grappling has looked insane, and when she gets you on the ground, she truly is hunting for submissions, trying to land ground and pound. I like when someone hunts for the finish, and so far, you know, she's proven to be good. 2-0 in 2024, 2-5 win streak. I think it continues here. I'm going to go decision, though. I am going to go by decision. I know she hunts the finish, but it strikes me as a decision win here. Following that, back to the men's bantamweight division. Final time of the night, though. Here we have Ariel Helwani's lookalike, Amin Zahabi, as he takes on the legend Pedro the Young Punisher Munoz. He's not young anymore, let me tell you that. Amin Zahabi, 11-2. Pedro Munoz, 20-9 with 2 no contests. 5'8 to 5'6 gives Amin 2 inches in height, and he has 3 inches in reach. 6'8 to 6'5. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Amin, plus 110 is the underdog. Pedro at minus 135 is the favorite. Zahabi, though, hometown boy from Quebec, Canada. Of those 11 wins, 8 finishes, 5 KOs, 3 subs. Of his 2 losses, he's been KO'd once. Currently on a 4-fight winning streak so far, been looking pretty good as of late. You know, he's had 2 round 1 knockouts, both coming at you in 3 minutes and 1 minute, pretty good. Last win, he beat the undefeated Javed Bashrat in March, ending his undefeated run. So he's been doing all right. Amin, he says he wants to come in, become the first man to finish Pedro Munoz. On his win streak, he's gone. Round 1 knockout decision, round 1 knockout decision, round 1 knockout decision. And here we go. Might be setting up another round 1 knockout, but it's no easy task. I mean, we just saw Max Holloway get knocked out. No, Pedro Munoz is as durable as they come. Minus 135, the favorite, 38 years old, from Brazil, now lives and trains in Florida. Of those 20 wins, 4 KOs, and 9 subs. Of his 9 losses, he's never been finished. Now, Pedro, I won't lie, did start out his, you know, career 10-0 before coming to the UFC, and then immediately lost. All right. And then, you know, win, no contest loss, 4-fight win streak, split decision loss to John Dodson, 3-fight win streak, including a knockout of Cody Garbrandt, poises him for a big fight with Aljamain Sterling for a number one contender fight. Then actually loses a fight of the night to Frankie Edgar, picks up a fight of the night win over Jimmy Rivera. Then loses 2 fights, no contest, wins over Chris Gutierrez, has his last win, April of 2023, over Chris Gutierrez. Since then, 2-fight losing streak, most recently lost in March to Kyler Phillips. Since 2019, since June of 2019, he has gone 2-6 with 1 no contest. Pedro has been on the wrong side of many decisions, hasn't gotten a finish in 5 years. I'm backing Amin Zahabi in this one. It's tough to pick Pedro Munoz. You know, he's 38. He's getting up there. And who knows? Like, we might as well go with Amin Zahabi by round 1 knockout. Spice it up. Each up here kind of prove that anyone can be beat any type of way. Same with DDP submitting Adesanya. I mean, truly, we've learned this year that anything can happen in MMA. It's very entertaining. And Amin Zahabi, hometown boy, we'll give it to the Canadian. After that, welterweight matchup between Mike Proper Mallet, who's the biggest favorite on this card at minus 270, as he takes on the biggest underdog at plus 220, Trevin Giles. Mike Mallet, 10-2-1, Trevin Giles, 16-6. 6'1 to 6', gives Mike 1 inch in height, but Trevin has the reach, 74 to 73. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Mike Mallet, 32 years old, from Ontario, Canada. Of his 10 wins, 4 KOs and 6 subs, a 100% finish rate. Both of his losses have come by knockout. Most recently was on a 8-fight winning streak before he lost to Neil Magny with 15 seconds left. This dude won 14 minutes of the fight, gets reversed in the final minute, and gets TKO'd into oblivion. I mean, truly, he dominated Neil Magny round 1, dominated Neil Magny round 2, and then round 3 was in firm control, gets flipped, and gets TKO'd. It was insane. But as we all know, there's actually a very weird phenomenon that I don't know if it's going to be broke, but Neil Magny has 13 losses in his career. He has never lost two fights back-to-back since 2013. It's been a long time coming, and since 2022, he's got win-loss. And sadly, Mike Mallett was on the wrong side of that one. It was pretty entertaining, honestly. Mallett, he's entertaining. He brings the power. He brings the submission abilities. He's exciting. I mean, 100% finish rate, getting another chance to win in Canada. We'll see how he does against Trevin Giles. And Trevin Giles is very notable for being on almost everyone's highlight reel. Surely you have to suck to not make it onto his highlight reel. Trevin, 32 years old as well. Of course, the plus 220 underdog from Texas. Of those 16 wins, he has 6 KOs and 5 subs. Of his 6 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times and submitted 3 times. Now, this is a fun fact. These two actually competed in a grappling match in 2022, not counting towards their MMA record, a grappling match, and Mike Mallett won by decision, funny enough. So that, Mike Mallett, we know that he can out-grapple him. Giles, officially on a 2-fight losing streak, got submitted by Gabriel Bonfim in July of 2023, and earlier this year in February, got brutally knocked out by Carlos Prates. He has also been knocked out by Michael Morales, Driscus Duplessis, been submitted by Zach Cummins, been submitted by Gerald Meerschaert. This dude has been on multiple people's highlight reels. Fun fact, he actually owns a win over the number 10-ranked middleweight Roman Dolidze. Funny enough, last win came in March of 2023 when he won a split decision over Preston Parsons. You know, as of late, Giles kind of loses in rounds 1 and 2. I think Mallett is coming out hungry, not wanting to leave anything to chance, and we get a Mike Mallett round 1 knockout finish. Shockingly, I think Giles' chin is shot, and I like Mike Mallett. Truly, I believe his loss to Neil Magny was a humbling experience. He even said he could point out how he won 14 of the 15 minutes of the fight, but he said, what will that prove? I lost in the end. And I like that attitude. Shows a winning attitude. Mike Mallett, I do believe he is one of the new wave of welterweights, one of the top new welterweights, and this was just a little stepping stone for him. He'll be back. He's hungry. Give me Mike Mallett over Trevin Giles. Moving up to the middleweight division, as the fellow Canadian Marc-Andre Barriot Powerbar takes on Dustin Stolfus. Marc-Andre Barriot, 16-8 with one no contest. Dustin Stolfus, 15-6. Mark is the favorite, minus 205. Dustin the underdog, plus 170. 6'1 to 6' gives Mark 1 inch in height. Dustin says 1 inch in reach, 75-74. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Let's start with the man from Quebec, Canada, the 34-year-old Marc-Andre Barriot. Of his 16 wins, 10 KOs. And one sub. Of his 8 losses, he has been finished 3 times. Mark, been with the UFC since 2019. You know, it's safe to say it's been very lackluster. He's gone 5-6 with no contest since joining the UFC. Most recently, he was knocked out in a minute by Joe Pyfer in June. Before that, a split decision loss to Chris Curtis. So he was fighting top-level guys. Okay, other losses. Anthony Hernandez, Jun Young Park, Chidi and Guchani look top-level guys. Biggest career win, probably Eric Anders, won a fight of the night, second to last time he was in Canada. But Mark, always game, always scrappy. You know, the takedowns usually don't go his way. But when he's not fighting a power puncher like Joe Pyfer, he usually stands a fighter's chance. And he's not going to be really dealing with that here as he takes on Dustin Stolfus, 32 years old, from Pennsylvania. Of his 15 wins, 2 KOs and 6 submissions. Of his 6 losses, he has been finished 4 times, 2 ways by KO, 2 ways by submission. Dustin, of course, is 2-5 in the UFC, having been finished in 4 of those 5 losses. You know, it's been rough. It's been rough for Dustin. Debuts, loses 3 straight, submitted in round 3, just with under like 2 minutes left against Joe Meerschaert and Rodolfo Vieira. Finally gets a win in July of 2022, then gets knocked out in 19 seconds by Abus Magomedov. Last win, performance of the night, rear naked chokehold against Puneli Soriano in December. Came back in June and got spinning back elbow by Bruno Ferreira. So Dustin Stolfus is going to try and take you down. That's the name of the game. And as we look at the takedown defense here, I mean, Marc-Andre Barriot has a 67% takedown defense, which isn't too bad. Takedown accuracy at 41% for Dustin Stolfus does make me lean Marc-Andre Barriot. And I think Mark breaks him down. And by round 2, you get a TKO for Marc-Andre Barriot. I hope he gets a feel-good win in Canada. That's right. We're not riding with all the Canadians, but we are riding with Marc-Andre Barriot. After that, the men's light heavyweight division, as Kyle Bigfoot Machado drops down from heavyweight to take on Brenson the Gorilla Ribeiro. Kyle Machado, 8-3-1. Brenson, 15-7 with one no contest. 6'4" to 6'3" gives Kyle 1 inch in height, but the reach, 81 inches is 78 for Brenson Ribeiro. What a reach. Southpaw for Kyle, orthodox for Brenson Ribeiro. Kyle is the favorite at minus 165. Brenson Ribeiro, plus 135. Kyle, Bigfoot Machado, 30 years old, from British Columbia, Canada. It was originally from Brazil, but this is where he's from now. Of those 8 wins, 4 KOs, and 2 subs. Of his 3 losses, he's never been finished. Currently 0-2 in the UFC, decision loss in November to McParkin, and April loss of this year to Dontell Mays. It's been lackluster. It's been very lackluster for Kyle Machado. And even getting a contract, you know, he got a contract on Season 7 of the Dan Whitaker series. It was just average. You know, it was an average performance from him. Outstruck his guy, but never really had him in danger of being finished. Look, I don't know what to expect from Kyle Machado, but he needs to bring some thunder if he wants to stay in the UFC. Someone who always, you know, is either the giver of thunder or the taker of thunder is Brenson Ribeiro. Plus 135, the 28-year-old is from Brazil. Of his 15 wins, 9 KOs and 6 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 5 times. That is right. Of this man's 23 professional fights, he's only been the distance 3 times. Actually, twice, because he had a no-contest loss. Brenson, also fought in Season 7 of Dan Whitaker series, did get a big finish. Debuted in February, had to take on the giant from China, Zhang Mingyang. Gets knocked out in round 1. Then has to take on the undefeated Russian grappler, Magomed Gadzialuzev. And he put up a great fight. Okay, I don't want to lie. Magomed won. But what I really saw in that fight is Brenson turned it around. Okay, Brenson really shocked him early. Was landing takedowns of his own. But then once Magomed got in the rhythm, he got defeated. But I do think Brenson brings the thunder, brings the power. He's lived by the sword, died by the sword. And I haven't seen anything exciting from Kyle Machado. What I have seen is Brenson Ribeiro being exciting. I'm going to pick Brenson Ribeiro. I'm going to go round 1 knockout. But I'm going to be honest, anything can happen. I haven't seen Kyle Machado in a minute. I haven't seen Brenson Ribeiro in, I guess, not too long. But I haven't seen enough to really know what will happen in this one. It's a coin flip, and I'm going with Brenson Ribeiro. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into what I consider the best 3 fights of the card. And they are the final 3 fights of the card. Let's go to the men's heavyweight division. As the number 11th ranked, the heavyweight knockout king, the man from Houston, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, back in action, man. So excited. He takes on the unranked, undefeated Jannata Diniz. Derek Lewis, 28-12 with one no contest. Jannata Diniz, 8-0. 6'4" to 6'3" gives Jannata 1 inch in height. Both men have a 79-inch reach advantage, and both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Let's start with the knockout king. He's incredible. Most knockouts in UFC history. Derek Lewis, somehow a plus 140 underdog. They're sleeping on my boy here in Canada. Are you kidding me? 39 years old from Houston, as I mentioned. Of his 28 wins, 23 knockouts. 1 sub, too. Can't forget that sub from years ago. Of his 12 losses, he has been knocked out 7 times and submitted twice. So, I mean, you rarely get a Derek Lewis decision. Truly, truly, truly. He was actually supposed to fight Alexander Romanov, who we mentioned on this card, but for some reason they were like, nah, we don't want Romanov and Lewis to fight. Let's find them new opponents. And that's what happened. Lewis is coming off of a round 3 knockout in May over Rodrigo Nascimento in the main event. Before that, took on Halton Almeida and became the first man Halton Almeida could never finish. Crazy enough, across 5 rounds, never got finished. Before that, had a round 1 33-second knockout of Marcos Rogelio de Lima. Derek Lewis, you know, you're going to look at the facts since August of 2021. And, you know, we could even go since 2019. I mean, this guy has suffered 5 losses. But those losses, let's be real, they're to the number 2 guy in the division. They are to the number 4 guy in the division. They're to the number 6 guy in the division. The number 7. Okay, he has only lost to the best of the best since then. And, you know, he's also had knockouts of Alexi Olenek, not knockouts of Chris Curtis. Curtis Blaydes. Knockouts of Chris Daukaus. You know, Derek Lewis is super exciting. Okay, cardio issue, it's always been there. We know what we're going to get with Derek Lewis. We just hope he doesn't get out grappled. It's the only time he loses. Truly, 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 Derek Lewis only loses when he gets out grappled. And we know with Jannata Diniz, I don't think we're going to get that. I'm going to be honest, I do not think we're going to get that with Jannata Diniz, as surprised as it may seem. Minus 170 favorite, 33 years old, from Brazil. Of those 8 wins, 7 KOs, 6 of them in round number 1. Came off a Dana White's Contender Series Season 7, where he had a 3-minute knockout, debuts in April, gets a round 2 knockout of Austin Lane, then August of this year, takes on Carl Williams and has a very lame decision. Does get taken down twice, but is able to power through that, outstrike him in rounds 1 and 2, ended up losing round 3. Kanata Diniz, I'm sorry, man, but you're falling to the Black Beast, all right? You're falling to the Black Beast, and this, if anything, if Kanata Diniz wins, this is going to put a lot of people on the radar about this guy, but I haven't seen enough. I haven't seen enough. We're going to a decision with Carl Williams. You're losing round 3 by being outgrappled. You know, that shows me that you like to swing and bang, okay? And when you're swinging and when you're banging your fists with Derek Lewis, you're going to sleep. Derek Lewis, round 1 knockout. He'll always be there. It's always the best pick. That's who we're riding with. And alrighty, this could potentially be a number 1 contenders fight here, and I very well might think it is. The number 3 ranked Aaron Blanchfield of the women's flyweight division takes on the number 5 ranked Rose Namajunas. This one should be entertaining. Aaron Cold-Blooded Blanchfield, 12-2. Thug Rose Namajunas, 14-6. 5'5-5'4 gives Rose 1 inch in height, 1 inch in reach to Aaron Blanchfield, 66-65. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Minus 125 for Aaron. She is the favorite. Plus 105. Rose is the underdog. Ooh, you rarely see Rose Namajunas being the underdog. Aaron Blanchfield, 25 years young, from New Jersey. Over 12 wins, 2 KOs, 4 subs. She had a 11-fight win streak snapped by Manon Fiorot in March. That was truly the number 1 contenders fight. That was embarrassing in her hometown of New Jersey, suffering a defeat. But other than that, Aaron Blanchfield's been a killer. You know, came in 6-0 in the UFC before that loss to Manon Fiorot, beat Miranda Maverick, submitted J.J. Ulrich, Kimura'd Molly McCann in round 1, submitted Jessica Andrade in a main event, and beat Talia Santos in a competitive fight in August of 2023. You know, this is her first fight since March. I think Aaron is very skilled for her age at 25, and truly, I'll be rooting for her in this one. I will be actively rooting. Aaron Blanchfield, as she takes on the former women's champion of the strawweight division, Thug Rose Namajunas, 2-time champion. I gotta give her some respect. Rose, 32 years old, from Colorado. Of those, 14 wins? She has 2 KOs and 5 subs. Both these ladies have a 50% finish rate. Of her 6 losses, she's been finished twice. Rose, one of the staples of the UFC, guaranteed Hall of Famer. Been fighting killers since the get-go. Carla Esparza, Angela Hill, Paige VanZant, Tisha Panton, Carolina Kowalski, Michelle Warson Gomez, Joanna Jędrzejczyk multiple times, Jessica Andrade multiple times, Zhang Weili multiple times, Carla Esparza again. Manon Fiorot, last time she lost was to her in September of 2023. I mean, that's her entire UFC resume, and those are all legends of the game. 2-0 so far in 2024. In 2 main events, she went 5 rounds with Amanda Hibas, won that one, and went 5 rounds with Tracy Cortez, won that one too. Zero excitement in any of her fights. She has not had an exciting fight since that Zhang Weili knockout in 2021. Rose, she's not even washed. That's the thing. She's not even washed. She just fights a boring style. Counter punches. Punches will land a takedown here and there. She had a shocking knockdown of Tracy Cortez in that fight. I actually did not catch that, but I saw the knockdown, shockingly enough. Rose will probably get the stun. Rose Namajunas will probably get the stun. This was actually supposed to be the main event, but they were like, nah, we're going to put some men above them. I know sexism and stuff, but I just don't think they expected this to be that entertaining. But I'm going to go with Aaron Blanchfield. All right, and I know I'm saying Rose will probably win, but Aaron Blanchfield, she's the favorite. I think she has the anti-grappling. We saw it against Talia Santos to neutralize that with Rose. And Aaron Blanchfield's that scrappy fighter, you know, when she's throwing like Julia Pena, and she can land, and she can take it too. And this is only 3 fights. All right, I have 3 fights. This is only 3 rounds. Okay, this is only 3 rounds. And, you know, as I look at Rose's last few fights, you know, she won all 3 against Tracy Cortez. But that was on short notice because these two were actually supposed to fight in Denver. Before that, she had a set main event against Amanda Hibas. And those first 3 rounds were pretty competitive. I can't lie. Those first 3 rounds were pretty competitive for Amanda Hibas. Amanda might have actually won 2 of them or something. But I don't really know, guys. I'm trying to find some excitement for this. I hope it's entertaining. We're going with Erin Blanchfield. Never really been a fan of Rose. Her style's just very technical. Like, technical to a point where it's just like, come on, do some excitement or something. But yeah, that's where we're riding with. That's who we're going with. This all builds up to the best fight of the card. I love that we're giving flyweights love. Truly, truly, I do. I love that we're giving flyweights love. And the flyweight division, red hot. As we already know, Kaia Sakura is coming in, taking on Pantoja for the championship in December. We just learned that Brandon Royval will remain the number one contender as he has beaten Tatsuro Taira. Asu Amabayev has jumped in at number 7. Manel Cape still searching for a fight. Kakar Francis coming off a big knockout. He ranked number 4. But here we have the number 2 and number 3. Brandon Moreno at 2, Amir Albazi at 3. If Amir Albazi wins this, he's probably getting the next title shot, especially if Pantoja wins. If Moreno wins, you get into this awkward territory of things. So this is a very crucial fight to the title picture of 125 pounds. Let's do it. Brandon Moreno minus 155. The Assassin Baby is the favorite. Amir, the Prince Albazi, plus 130. 21-8-2. That is right, the 32nd professional fight for Brandon Moreno. Amir Albazi, 17-1. 5'7 to 5'5 gives Brandon 2 inches in height, and he has 2 inches in reach, 70 to 68. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters. Let's do it. Brandon Moreno, 30 years old, from Mexico. Of those 21 wins, 5 KOs and 11 subs. And of his 8 losses, he has somehow never been finished. Incredible. Last time he fought, he actually lost a split decision to Brandon Royval in February, and that was on short notice as he was supposed to fight Amir Albazi. So it's been a long time coming, getting Amir Albazi a fight. Moreno is on a 2-fight losing streak, be it those are split decisions to the champion and the number one contender. His other losses before that, the former flyweight champion before him, Deviseo Figueiredo. I mean, Moreno has been a dog since the get-go. It wasn't always this way. You know, there's a point he went on a 2-fight losing streak and got cut, okay? Worked his way back. Since then, you know, he's beaten Kaikara France. He holds a win over Brandon Royval. He holds wins over Deviseo Figueiredo, wins over Kaikara France. He is so talented, one of the greatest flyweight champions of all time. Brandon Moreno back in action. I'm happy to see he's getting another main event here. Okay, you know, we're respecting how good Brandon Moreno is. He's super talented. You know, he looked a shell of his former self in his last fight. You know, I don't know what was going on there, so this will be a real tell of if Moreno can still hang with these young and hungry up-and-comers. But that fight against Alexander Pantoja, one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. Truly, I tell you. UFC 290, go watch it. Fight of the Year contender. Actually, did I give that fight of the year last year? Who did I give fight of the year? I might have given them fight of the year. I honestly can't remember, but that was insane. Moreno, Royval, it was boring. It was boring, and the split decision was a bit shaky. You know, it was a bit shaky. 4 rounds for Moreno, and Moreno might have won round 1 and 2, but you know, I definitely think he lost the final 3. Royval looked really good in there, so we'll see if Moreno can hang with another up-and-comer. That is the Prince Amir Albazi, 31 years old, born in Iraq, but now trains in Las Vegas, currently on a 6-fight winning streak. Of his 17 wins, 6 KOs and 8 subs, 14 of 17 wins by finish. We love to see that. And fun fact, he has actually had 7 canceled fights since joining the UFC. He's only has 5 wins in the UFC. He is 7 canceled fights. Debuted in 2020, triangle choke. Decision win after that, red naked chokehold after that, actually of Deviseo Figueiredo's brother, as I see that now. Then knocked out Alessandro Costa. Last time he fought, June 2023, main event, beat Kaikara France in a controversial split decision. Now he's here. He's wound up with a number one contenders fight against Brandon Moreno, and he's got to get done. Truly, he's got to get done. I'm not even a hater. I'm not even a hater of Brandon Moreno, but I'm an Amir Albazi fan. You know, I don't know what it is about this guy. I just like his style. I like his attitude. The dominant win over Alexandre Costa I rocked with. I thought the Kaikara France fight was a bit screwy. I can't lie. As we look at that fight, I mean, I predicted it correctly, but it just came down to the takedowns. You know, Kai won round 1, all right? Kai won round 2. We get into round 3, you know, Amir used his grappling to win that. You get into round 4, you know, Kai really dominated him there. Landed a takedown. Round 5, Amir was shooting takedowns, wasn't landing. And then we get to the end, and it's kind of just like, I don't really know who won, but it just feels like Kekar France won, and they give it to Amir Elbazi. So this is a big opportunity for Amir to kind of show that loss was a fluke, show that he didn't actually lose that, and get the win against Brandon Moreno. This screams five-round decision. I just do not sense a finish in any regards. I mean, neither of these guys have been finished in their career. Be it okay, Amir has one loss, Moreno has eight, but I'm going to pick Amir Elbazi. You know, they have a very similar style. They can grapple. They can strike. You know, I saw Amir wanted to grapple more with Kekar France, but we know the power punching abilities that Kekar France has. Look at that Steve Ercik knockout. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. Moreno, despite being a year younger, just has been aged. You know, he's just been to so many wars. You know, I will say that Brandon Moreno, you know, more experience despite being younger, but, you know, so many wars against Kekar France. The Devin Figueiredo, all four of their fights were wars. Every Pantoa fight was a war. The Royval fight was a war. It's just, he's very aged. He's very aged in his battle scars despite being young. So we'll see if that holds it against him, but I'm excited for him. I truly am excited for this matchup. And hey, you know, winner will probably be ranked number two, and we'll probably be looking for a title opportunity next year. Guys, that's all we have for today. Those are UFC Edmonton predictions. I find it funny we have a Mexican and an Iraqi main eventing a Edmonton card. Actually, the top three fights on the card, none of the fighters are from Canada. We couldn't get anyone. Do we have any good Canadian fighters? I think they actually might have found all the good Canadian fighters. Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. Actually, this is it. This is the best that we can get from Canada, the more that I look at it. There really isn't a stud from Canada. We're still searching for them. Maybe we'll find them on Nowitzki Contender Series or something. I don't know. Thank you all for listening so much. Have a happy, happy Halloween. Get some candy. Be safe out there, kids. Wrap your willies, you horny buggers. And let me know who you guys are riding with for week 9 of the NFL. Go Amir Elbazi. Go Derek Lewis. Go Aaron Blanchfield. Heck, we'll even throw in a go Yusuf Zalal. Why not? Ladies and gentlemen, I'll catch you next time on none other than where you're listening to right now, the Surprise Jab Podcast.